Welcome, scholars of film and pop culture, to our panel this evening on the Iconic Moments in Movie History podcast from the Hollow Nine Network. I am your host, Dave the Clone, and joining me tonight, as always, is Gomez, not Adams.
Hello.
And all the way from Jock and Nerd, or Nerd and Jock? Did I reverse it?
No, the jock is always first. Come on, you know jocks are always first. I lost an arm wrestling thing, and that's why it's called Jock and Nerd.
Well, there you go. All the way over from the Jock and Nerd podcast, we have our buddy Imran joining us again. How are you, buddy?
Very good. What's up, listener? And thank you guys for last minute pulling me in. I had a crazy week. I really need this. This is going to be a blast. Strap in, everyone.
So we are a safe haven for those in danger of losing their minds. We are a support group for anyone who needs it. We are a platform for creative individuals. And tonight we are attacking, since it's the Halloween season, I think it's only apropos that we start going into horror movies, volume one, Evil Entities. Ooh. And of course we're picking a selection from the three epic decades. We have nothing from two. Well, we've verged into 2000 a little bit, but so far we're still kind of keeping in the three decades that I consider like the epic ones of my lifetime.
Agreed.
And
classic.
And we're gonna kick it off with the 1973. I mean, was it? This was pretty much like an instant, like, oh my God, took the world by storm kind of thing. But it was The Exorcist, and we're talking about the first battle with what we eventually learn is called Pazuzu. But we're talking about when the two priests go in, and they have the power of Christ compelling the demon to listen to their pleas. I don't know, man. I remember I wanted to see this movie because Beetlejuice talked about it. You know what I mean? Like, that is why I saw The Exorcist at the age
what,
I saw.
What
it.
Was the line in Beetlejuice? I don't remember.
I've seen The Exorcist 167 times, and it keeps getting funnier every time I see it. Not to mention the fact you're talking to a dead guy here, so what do you think?
Ah, I love it.
You think I'm qualified?
Absolutely.
Right up there with nice fucking model.
Honk, honk. Yeah. Adam, why did you build that? I didn't. But yeah, I think there's no way to mention The Exorcist without immediately thinking of probably the poster, which is accompanying our posting on Facebook about tonight's episode. And this sequence where we get some pea soup spit up on some men of the cloth, and they just go right into the... you know, and it's parodied in so many things. I always think of Dr. Evil in the chair in Austin Powers 2 with the power of Christ compels you. I need an old priest and a young priest. Like, we all know what that means. So there's absolutely no way this moment is not iconic.
This is like your Casablanca for, like, horror movies, where this was the cliche before the cliche. They invented the cliche. Like, if you go back and watch Casablanca now, you're like, this movie's nothing but a bunch of cliches struck together. Like, but they did it first, so yeah. It's hard. And I remember this was a time in my life where I was really getting into watching just, like, classic cinema, and I actually read the book.
Ooh.
from William Peter Blatty. Did he write the book?
Yeah.
Right?
I almost said Peter Benchley, but I'm like, nope, that's Jaws.
Yeah, William Peter Blatty written for the screen by as well as the novel.
The novel, yeah, and the book.
He did actually both.
Ugh. The book was amazing. The fact that it was based on kind of true events.
Yeah.
Beat the fuck out of me. Well, and, you know, you got Regan floating in the air.
That's what always I thought was scary about this whole thing. I mean, the fact that you're like, okay, this is kind of true, right? Yeah. Like, there's somebody that this happened to, you know? Like,
I wondered if the priest actually jumped out the fucking window at the end.
And why would that Why would that kill the demon, dude? Like, what? I mean, I guess it's the best move you can make. It's like, all right, guys, look, everybody else is fucked. Yeah, the rest of the party's dead, man. What are you going to do? Jump out the window.
Yeah, absolutely.
The demon's like, oh, fuck it. I'll find another body. It's cool.
Well, that's the thing. It's sort of like one of those, you know what pisses me off about this? You can't win. You know, I don't like the no-win scenario. I'm pulling a Kirk over here, but it's sort of like, that's bullshit. This thing can just go around and do whatever it wants. Like, we can't do anything.
So it's the end of Fallen.
Yeah, I was going to say Fallen? We're in the Fallen again? But that was a dirty trick with that movie. You know, starting it off with Denzel's voiceover and being like, let me tell you about the time I almost died. And it's like, so how come at the end it's not just a bunch of cat meowing? But fuck it. That's a different iconic moment. So, I mean, what do you guys remember when you saw this movie the first time? I mean, there are a lot of moments in this movie that are disturbing, that are scary, whether you're religious or not, and whether you're of the faith the movie's talking about or not. It's just the concepts are like, there's some shit we can't explain, you know?
How about the just the crawling on the ceiling?
Yeah, and the and down the stairs.
And that,
and
wasn't that in the extended cut, crab walk? That's what I saw, and that was horrifying. I mean, what they made fucking Linda Blair do, at her age, you could never pull that off. I don't think there was any child labor laws back then.
Yeah,
they were like, we're just gonna have you swear and be foul. And then just the reactions, if you read some of the backstory of how director Friedkin got real visceral reactions, sometimes unintentionally by fuck up, sometimes motherfuckers firing a gun behind people and then roll it. Like, who does that?
Well, Hitchcock probably was the last one to really treat the actors like cattle like that, as far as we know.
Cocaine, it's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, seriously.
And I feel like George Miller still does the same shit. You know, he doesn't give a fuck. I will always kill you, just make sure you film it.
I'll tell you, I mean, everything that came out of that Fury Road camp about how hard that movie was to make, you kind of almost...
Dude, you see it. You see it on screen. You're like, this is insane. What?
And that's the whole thing. Like, as the guys on this side of the screen, you know, we are obviously responding to things. That's why we have these moments in these movies that are becoming iconic for us. But if you do sit back and think about it, we're like, yeah, man, they were beating the shit out of them for that. You know what I mean? And I'm just sitting here, like, blazing out and watching it going, wow. You know, but that was, like, 4 years of somebody's life up there. What we're watching right now, that was like, and you always notice, especially with these movies, how much like a young person will be older at different times of the movie, because you could tell like they're trying to contain it. We're trying to shoot it all before this kid grows, but it's fucking puberty. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing we could do about it. I mean, this part almost seems like it might have been traumatic. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't really see a lot of Linda Blair after this. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And she was like, fuck this acting shit if every movie's going to be like this. But even in that scene, like, they frosted the room down. You see, you know, they're uncomfortable. They're cold. These are practical effects. Like, they're actually chattering. Their teeth are actually chattering.
And if you really want a mind fuck for you, Stanley Kubrick wanted to direct this.
Oh, my God.
Oh, he is the worst with actors.
Wow.
I know, but imagine how much worse it could be.
Yeah, it's Shelley Duvall, man. She's like the only one who knows for real.
Every take, it would have been 100 takes for every goddamn scene until he beats them down. But I love that approach, because he gets those actors to a place where you can't get that performance. They're beaten, they're broken down.
Well, I mean, we're capturing stories about the human condition, whether it's a fantastical story about superheroes flying around or it's taking place in an alternate world. I mean, this is how I've always watched movies, that you're supposed to be assigning a level of belief and in the reality that they're creating. So, sure. I mean, it's an incredible attention to detail to go that deep. But I remember, at least in the acting classes I took in high school and any of the ones I was in college, there's always this level where they say, as the actor, you have to protect yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you're never supposed to do anything that would harm you or anyone else in prep for a role or in performing a role. So, like, it's interesting to me that the most powerful movies are the ones that have moments that stick out like this. We always then find out, they kind of didn't go by that rule. They kind of violated the living shit out of that rule. They, like, scarred a child for life.
I mean, at times they weren't really acting. They were just truly reacting. They're puke in the face, screams, like... just, oh, you love it and you capture it. I like same thing with that moment in Aliens where he didn't tell them that, or Alien, that this thing was going to pop out and shoot blood in their face. And they're just incredible, sincere reactions.
Is that Nancy Cartwright? Is that the queen? Yeah. Like when she gets sprayed with the blood, she's like, ah! They're like, yep, that's real. That shit's right. And I mean, this is the same, I believe in this film, this is the same scene where at one point, doesn't she kneel on the bed as if she's praying to something that they can't see? And then it goes dark, and then it comes up, and the fucking demon is...
The thing is there. She gets up, she knocks the Father Karras out, and then they look, and there's like this horn head silhouette, and her arms are up in the air.
Yeah, oh, that thing was
hard. You're like, what the fuck is going on?
That's the moment in this whole sequence that pushed me, that I was like, well, you know what? Nothing else in the movie before this or after this is going to be as scary as that. Because but that lends credence to the being afraid of shadows. You know what I mean?
You really feel bad for the girl by the end of it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And then that she's just walking away at the end, and they like she looks back at the window and then walks away. And then if you catch the second movie when she's just like talking to this other little girl in a different mental institution somewhere, and she's like, "Oh yeah, I was possessed by a demon once," and then, and just telling that girl that heals her. Like she never spoke or whatever; she hadn't spoken in months or years, and she's like, "Do you know what happened there?" And like the mom's like, "She's speaking." You're like, "Oh my god, oh my god." Now, I mean, I would say we don't verge into the new stuff so much on this show, and we're going to at some point, but I feel like for people like us who have this aficionado level of appreciation for film, a lot of it always goes back to these fundamentals. But in thinking about this scene and the way it was constructed and the way it lasted and the way it kind of reached out of the screen and actually affected us, I'm immediately thinking of movies now like Insidious and The Conjuring that probably wouldn't even have a leg to stand on if a movie like The Exorcist hadn't laid the groundwork for them ahead of
time.
That's
interesting. I've kind of like, I've heard really good things about The Conjuring. I should watch it, but I kind of like, I got out of the horror after like The Ring I enjoyed.
Right.
But like, it wasn't like The Exorcist. Like, it's to this day, that movie is still legitimately terrifying.
Yeah.
I dare you to watch this movie in a dark room by yourself. You will shit your pants.
Yeah. And you won't sleep. Like, you won't sleep. Like, what I always would think. I'm like, Beetlejuice laughed at this.
Yeah.
Like, let's just put
that line is so great.
Put this in perspective.
Plus, this is the first time I think I was like, oh, that's what holy water does to demons. I get it now. It'll fuck them up. Like, the scars show up as the water hits. You were like, because it wasn't doing anything until you saw, and you saw a little wound. You were like, oh, crap. Okay.
Yeah.
That's not good. That's not normal.
Yeah.
And then I think because of this and because it's kind of based on a true story, I actually, when I watch those shows on Destination America or on Discovery Channel, those A Haunting, and they a lot of them feature a lot of similar occurrence sort of details, and a lot of them do. Once the holy water starts getting thrown, the victim is like, oh my god, it burns, and it's this is a tough battle. It's a tough battle against something that you can't see or touch. But it's,
it can show up anywhere.
And when you say possess, I mean, this thing is taking over your mind, taking over your body. She's masturbating with a cross and bleeding as a result of it. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's your it's classic, this vanilla possession. Like, this is the base possession level if this happens to you.
In fact, on the other side, they're showing the movie going, all right, guys, let's see how he fucked up here, because you're supposed to be able to get him and keep him. So, you know, it's like a training video. Like, don't ever jump into the priest. Whatever you do, they'll do some shit like this. They'll jump out the window.
This is a demon scroll.
Yeah, they're like, all right, guys.
Here's what I
want to
do.
Everybody knows Pazuzu. Yeah, all right, we're going to see the tape today. It's like, this is Regan. Finals week.
Regan was one of our MVPs. She was a good girl.
I'll tell you, man.
That's why we retired her jersey.
Yeah.
You can learn a lot from this little girl.
It just goes to show there's no possession too small, but something you need to do something to get your name on the wall. That's how this works.
There's no small possessions, only small demons. You got that, demons? Just remember that going out there.
Now, it's interesting that we start with one movie that's about a demon sort of attacking or victimizing a young girl, a child, because it seems like there's something about the image of purity that a little girl represents, because then when we move into movie number two for tonight, we have a little girl who announced the arrival with "They're here" for 1982's Tobe Hooper classic Poltergeist. Well, I guess Spielberg classic that Hooper hated, and then Hooper tried to, I don't know if the remake is supposed to be more along the lines of what Tobe Hooper's original vision was.
Ah, fuck the remake.
Yeah, and the sequel.
I didn't know that Spielberg wrote on this.
Spielberg was one of three writers on this.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that's probably in my mind why it holds up, but they say that this is one of those movies that, like, while they were making it, everyone's like, what the fuck is this even gonna look like? Because there's three different people's visions being carved together for it. But
and there's so much, there was enough post-production work that had to be done on it.
Yeah.
That, you know, as you're making it, the actors are going to have no idea what the final is really going to look like.
It's like, you know, it almost like, and this is, I find that this is a lot in the 70s. So that was definitely like the golden age of modern filmmaking. All the actors, like especially Star Wars, they're like, yep, we showed up.
No.
We showed up. We did what they wanted. And then they go see the thing and it's like, oh my God, this is what we're doing for the next 30 years. And I think it seemed to me, because this eventually became a franchise, there was probably kind of that effect going on here too, where it's like they're making it and they're going, I don't know, today I'm getting covered in jelly and I'm going to land out of the fucking ceiling and then they're going to put me in the tub. I don't know what's happening. Yeah. And then they go watch the movie going, oh my God, this is awesome. Yeah. Oh my God.
Now that makes sense. Kind of.
And I mean, that "they're here" moment, even if you haven't seen Poltergeist, you kind of know what the deal is with that. You know, it's been parodied so many times.
Yep.
But it's still, when you're watching the movie, that particular moment is creepy as shit.
I mean, it has cheesy 80s overtones, but I think it still holds up in terms of scares. So let me just explain. This movie fucked me up about so
many things.
Oh,
this is the one you have a personal connection to, right?
Here's why. My cousins took me to see this movie. What was this, 1982?
82.
I was fucking 6 years old. They were not supposed to take me to see this movie. I sat in the theater. This movie fucked up trees outside my window.
Oh, God. So many things. Clown dolls.
Clowns? Static on television?
Yes,
never the
that's
same
a
again.
Big
Are you
one.
Fucking kidding me? I had to turn the TV off every time the static came on.
Static is a big... I mean, that...
And of course, that's not even... Looking in the mirror, face peeling.
Yeah.
I was
nightmares for weeks.
I still fucking blame them for this movie traumatized me to know it. I was not. You do not take a 6 year old to the theater to show him Poltergeist. What's wrong with you?
I will. Anyone who's been paying attention at home, like Gomez, is just like, oh Jesus, Dave, really? I definitely watched this movie like around that same age, like in kindergarten-ish. And it was one of the things that I must have been so scared by what it was that my mind stopped trying to put it together, because I forgot so much of it that I didn't watch it again. I mean, I know not only did I see it young, my mom watched it a lot. Like, I think what it was is that my mom used to just rent movies.
Okay, and your mom also let you watch Barbarella when you were four.
Yeah, it's a weird backstory. But there were like moments I remembered, like definitely the bathtub and the jelly and the coming out of the ceiling. Yeah. But there was stuff I completely forgot. And I watched it again when I was like 13. And it was on like a Saturday when I was home alone. And it was either on cable or on
Channel 11.
Yeah, I was going to say Shocktober, maybe. It was probably in that time. And that night, like, it didn't scare me during the day. I remember watching going like, whoa, this is more intense than I remember it being. And fuck, I mean, it's scary, but it's daytime and I'm fine and it's all good. By the time the night rolled around, I was shitting bricks. Like, it was just like, wow. Like, any door that's closed, I'm like, is there a glow starting?
Oh my God, the toys in the closet.
The closet became a horror show.
And of course, now it's, I mean, the whole static thing loses its impact these days. Like, okay, so the screen's blue.
Right.
What does that mean?
Yeah, there is no such thing as static. And
don't have static on TV anymore.
The idea that there would be a time where the programming would end, like where you see all these like statues and monuments in the country.
They run the national anthem.
National anthem.
And you got the test pattern.
Flag waving, the Iwo Jima Memorial, the test pattern, and then static. And it's like, this concludes our broadcast day. And you're like, oh shit, there was a time when even TV people went home from work. You know?
They went to bed.
But not.
There was no 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah. That genius of this movie to take your everyday common things and just flip them on their head. Like, that scene in particular, the voices that are dubbed in, kind of whispering.
Yeah.
Holy shit. That
and she's responding to them. Like, she's like, no, no. Okay. Yeah, you're like, God damn it, what are you hearing? What are you hearing? Fuck, what are you hearing?
And it's like she's not afraid. When she says they're here, she's kind of like into it. She's like, hey, they're here.
Like new people to play with, you know? Actually, when I think there was a Family Guy where they did this and Stewie was the one who went to the TV, it's a scary moment in that cartoon because they really recreate him responding to the voices that you don't hear. So when he's going like, yeah, no. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're like, this is fucking crazy. Like,
that just gave me chills.
It's a mind fuck, man. Yeah. Like, it's like, oh God. The idea, like they have, like the, and then right after the, then we actually saw the hand come out of the TV and it, when it goes into the wall, the dog is later barking at the spot that it went into. So like, it really kind of plays with this idea that there are multiple planes of existence all happening and occurring
right
at the same time.
Of each other.
And we literally can't see, like, there could be a fucking dead person standing right next to me right now. Horrifying myself as I live alone and continue this podcast, but it's okay.
I also learned how to find out how far a storm was based on the lightning and the thunder count.
I hated that little brother. He was the worst part of that movie for me.
I'm glad the tree ate him.
Yeah, because like all he did was they're like, Carolyn, yeah, like, what are you doing? Give me some information, you little shit. You saw it happen. What's going on? Like, where did she go?
He's a whiny fuck. Yeah. And then watching it older, I was like, hey, the parents are smoking a joint up in the bedroom, right on.
And they're just like, go to bed. Go to bed. Don't come in here. And they're having a grand old time. Like, they're like, they're enjoying. And it just seemed, you know. And a lot of this happens to me a lot now, watching movies from that time period, like even going into the 80s. Anything pre us having cell phones and internet was like, holy shit, man, everybody just did their own thing. Like if you watch, I'm sure you've watched Stranger Things on Netflix. Yeah. So there's a lot of Poltergeist references in there. The fact that they even talk about going to see the movie when it came out and him being trapped in another dimension. But even that, it's just like this recall to a time where like, you notice how all the other people on their block really didn't give a fuck that they were having issues other than that they thought it was weird. Meanwhile, now this shit would be on the fucking internet like, yo, this is happening in my house. Yeah. I find videos on YouTube of people who are like, so this is what we do. We set the camera up and then we just leave the house and this is what we taped. And it's like, there was one where it's this guy's kitchen. Literally, shit is just constantly like opening itself, throwing themselves.
No.
And I'm going, and I'm watching it, trying to be that skeptical video producer going,
trying to see where it stays.
Where's all the mechanics? Like, what could they have done? And some of them, okay, clearly you could put a machine in that to open that door. But like, I don't know, man, it looks pretty authentic. Like, literally shit just flying all over the place on its own.
Pressurized air compressor, man, that's all you need. Hit it in certain spots over the trigger.
In fact, there is actually a link to one of those videos on the Hollow 9 Facebook page. It's like the 25 strangest things caught on camera. It was like from 2 years ago. And it's a bunch of things. There are ones where you see people being like tormented by like a woman. It's closed circuit TV stuff a lot of the time. Like this woman is in the dining room in a hotel by herself and she's like just like stacking napkins or doing something and a chair moves and she's like, what the fuck? And then when she gets up to leave, all the chairs and tables fly at the door and don't let her out. And then the camera cuts and you're like, this is a security camera that's like designed and placed there to stop people from doing shit like this. And you don't see any people doing the shit. So when you think that like in a movie where they're kind of playing up the idea that children can see this, but the adults can't. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, fuck, dude.
The innocence. Yeah. I also love what makes this movie and the last movie particularly scary, but this one especially, is the behind-the-scenes cursed stories that heard the fact that four of these cast members died, one teenage girl brutally murdered by her boyfriend, and little Heather O'Rourke, Carol Ann, just dies as a kid.
Yeah.
And I read that they used real skeletons because it was cheaper. Yep. And buying fake skeletons.
And it's almost like, guys, are you even reading the script to the fucking movie we're making? We're doing the exact shit that they're doing in the movie. The exact shit!
Yeah. And I love that line. I just love that line where he's like, you moved the headstone,
but you didn't move the body! He's like, are you kidding? Who does this? Gomez, go.
But I still like the fact that the only scene that really scared her was the one where she had to hold on to the headboard.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the only one that really scared her. Everything else, she's like, yeah, I'm cool. Skeletons, no problem. Yeah.
Wait, you mean like when she was being pulled into the closet?
Yeah.
That, like actually psychologically scared her?
That broke her.
Wow. Well, I guess...
But that was the only scene that really bothered her.
That's the best up with that girl, man.
Yeah, that's... Hey, well, you know what? Maybe she knew what was coming.
And of course, Spielberg went from that to E.T.
Well, you gotta pretend you're not part of the secret Illuminati government making movies about shit that's real. You gotta follow up a true admission story with a fairy tale story about how the good aliens are coming to save our kids. You know what I mean? It's like the demons are trying to take them down below, and the aliens are coming from above to save us all. So it's all about fallen angels.
And then I also think the joke at the very end is always great, where he just pushes the TV out of the hotel. Yeah. I've always loved that. Great ending.
I've never walked into a hotel room without thinking about that. You know what I mean? Like, if any shit goes down, that's the first thing I'm throwing out of this fucking room. Like, right off the balcony, just this TV that probably cost $2,000, just rip it right off the thing, throw it out the door. What was going on? I don't know. Fires keep starting all over the place, but I just figured the TV is always the way in and out.
The TV's to blame.
It's the screen.
Dave is pulling up 4K 60-inch fucking flat screens right out the wall.
Trust me, it was better than getting a priest. This is what we're doing.
Less pea soup for everybody.
Oh, dear Lord. Dear Lord. All right, well, I mean, these two movies are very solid foundational cornerstones in the history of horror films, I think, especially of modern film or a film of all time. Definitely, they were evolutionary stepping stones. They changed the way people saw movies after them. They all left their audiences affected. Arguably, so was the third choice on our show tonight, and for different reasons, for much different reasons, but it still counts because these are all still stories about evil entities. I mean, the idea, when you think of horror movies, there's always multiple genres that come to mind, and I think slasher is one that sort of unfairly has dominated the public's perception when you say horror movies. Everyone, I mean, how do you not think Jason, Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, who else? There's got to be, I feel like there's one
and
more.
Then you saw the resurgence Hellraiser. Of torture porn, essentially.
Right.
Saw,
Hostel.
Yeah.
House
of Wax.
It went more to shock gore than actually getting you invested into characters and
very much so.
You know, creeping you out
and dealing with elements of the unknown that I mean, we also had a significant slew of the semi or based on true events stories, like your Wolf Creeks and your Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah,
they need your Paranormal Activity,
right? And well,
I think we'd go more towards Poltergeist than more.
Yeah, that does actually. Else.
I would say, and I would say actually, Paranormal Activity is the definitely the spiritual, no pun intended, successor to third film on the.
Right.
On the list
so.
Tonight, which by now, if you haven't listened to us blubbering about it, figured out we're going to be talking about the 1999 instant cult classic, The Blair Witch Project. But it's that area that these movies deal with that I always found to be the much more horrifying. You could argue that the real life, the serial killers or the slashers, which are probably things that could happen in real life without question. Those movies have a spiritual side to them or an evil entity side to them. But for the most part, it's about chopping people up, and normal people do that too. When we're talking about things like, hey, look, if you hear this story, your immediate mind is going to say that's bullshit. There's no way this is true. There's no such thing as monsters. There's no such thing as evil ghosts and spirits like this. There are handfuls of people that have experienced these things, and to them, yeah, they are very true. Mm-hmm. And I think even though the Blair Witch Project is a fictional story, the way they went about approaching it, I mean, look, all of us thought this shit was real until they were kind of forced to admit, all right, it's a fictional thing. I remember thinking right away when I even heard this movie coming out, so wait a minute, if these people disappeared, and then a year later, where they disappeared, yeah, these tapes showed up, and nobody's questioning it, but we're putting it in the fucking movies for people to go see? I was like, how is that line getting crossed without people losing their minds?
You know what I mean? Not be like a 60-minute special.
Right. This should be a fucking Dateline, not a movie theater.
I'm like, how are they profiting off these people's deaths? And I mean, like, they went so in depth. It was sort of the birth of using the internet to this level
early
of
viral
meta
marketing. But Dave, can you set up this moment that you picked? And just, I just want you to talk about the moment, and because I kind of remember this movie, I will give you my thoughts on the movie overall afterwards.
So the moment I'm picking is actually probably arguably the best moment of the movie because it's in the final moment of the movie. But this is her screaming for Josh as they're finding the cabin in the woods at the end and running in and seeing the one guy standing in looking in the corner as she's still screaming for Josh, who's the third producer of the film who disappeared. See, like, the whole idea here about these three student filmmakers going out into the woods to shoot this story about a local legend that's supposedly based on a true story. Halfway through the movie, one of them is abducted, is taken. They don't know what happened to him. And then they happen upon this cabin in the woods. That's part of the lore. It's a house where a serial killer who was supposedly possessed by the Blair Witch took seven children from the town of Blair in Burkittsville and murdered them. And one of his M.O.s was he would make one stand in the corner and then he would make the others watch as he killed that kid. Or it's the reverse. The other kid stood in the corner while he killed somebody else, and then he went and killed them. But so when we find one of our characters standing and staring in the corner, we know, oh shit, somebody's about to die. Then the camera just falls to the ground. But it's really the Josh, the screaming for Josh, the running through the house screaming for Josh. That was like a big part of the promotional material.
Yeah.
It is the big climax of the movie, because I'm sure a lot of what you're going to say has to do with the fact that fucking barely anything happens in this movie for a lot of the time. But the floor is yours.
I'll let Gomez get some things in.
Gomez, get some jabs in before Imran demolishes this moment.
No, I mean, I remember spending a good chunk of this movie up until that point yelling at them for to just die already.
Yeah.
I mean, just the sheer stupidity of the characters. Like, so you're going out into the woods. You haven't really told anybody where you are.
None of you are survival. None of you are survival experts.
We're gonna keep going.
Yeah. You guys are eating leaves and shit. You know. There were all the explanations that we were really going for the real visceral breakdown of people in an extreme situation. And you have, you know, Heather's the bitchy, pushy, kind of overachieving producer, unprepared, but thinks she's a genius, all that shit. Josh is kind of like the more laid back, doesn't give a fuck about too much, but is actually a decently good cameraman. And I forget even what the third guy's name is. The other guy is
dude.
He's an audio tech, and you know, he's kind of a douchebag. But eventually you start to feel for them. I mean, you can't help but not imagine how horrible that would be to be lost like that, you know, hope.
You don't have to scare the woods. I'm a city guy. I grew up to Door County. So I live in Chicago. We go up to Door County. My wife's mom has a thing like in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of the night, out in the woods is fucking scary.
Oh, it's
here. I'm fine. A fucking twig snaps. I'm like, the fuck was that?
Yeah, it's no joke.
Inside, I cannot handle that quiet and that shit.
And we went to, you know, Gomez and I went to school in Maryland, which is where this is supposed to take place.
On the Eastern Shore.
And I remember, I came back, so this was the summer between my freshman and sophomore year, and I came back sophomore year a week early to be a sort of sophomore counselor on like
one
of the orientation trips there. And I mean, we went to a survival school and did ropes courses in the woods, but like as soon as that shit got dark, all of us, like, we were talking shit about the Blair Witch all day, and then it got dark, and we're like, I'm going inside now.
See, I did that. I actually did that as a freshman, like, my freshman year.
So did I. I went on the trip. That's why when freshman year was over, I'm like, I totally want to come back. There were sophomores on my trip.
I did that before Blair Witch came out.
Right. Yeah. You were you were 2 years before, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was kind of the difference. But no, I mean, a lot of it was that the sheer incompetence of the characters really bothered me.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that had to do with a lot of other horror movies that came out, especially in the late 70s and 80s, you always had the final girl, the one who kind of was the one that stood up to the main bad guy. And even if it was a horror movie and lots of other people got killed, there was always somebody out there that was at least halfway competent or got to that point during the course of the movie.
Realized it was time to run.
There was no growing incompetence. It was just like, we're going to break these characters and we're going to see them ruined. And that bugged me about that movie. And that just, again, just like the sniveling into the camera and everything else. I'm so like, yeah, you better be sorry because you got everybody dead.
Yeah.
Well, look, this kind of like, it kind of ties into my thoughts. Now, listener, if you're a fan of this movie, I'm apologizing right now. This movie is bullshit. I appreciate the marketing leading up to the movie. I appreciate what it brought in terms of found footage types of things moving forward. But the internet ruined this movie. So for me, so I heard about this, and I remember looking up this thing and checking out the website, and I was like, holy shit, is this real? I should probably go see this.
They by put the time, more effort into that shit.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
The production. Yes. Absolutely. That was great. But by the time I saw the movie, it was ruined. So I'm like, okay, fine. Let me see this movie. It did nothing for me. It was a piece of shit movie. Like you see the tent part. And you're like, yeah, it's just people fucking clawing at the tent. Not really scary. The thing about the end is a guy taking a piss in the corner. There's a pile of sticks on the floor. What happened? That's it? What is this bullshit? Now, I like the low budget. I understand this movie was like the highest grossing movie because of the low budget. Yep. I relate that to Clerks. Clerks had horrible editing, horrible film grain, horrible sound, but the writing, horrible acting. The writing held the movie together.
Yeah.
This movie has all of that and no fucking script to go off of.
Well,
so you got nothing.
I think, all right, so we could play devil's advocate with it a little bit because, I mean, regardless, it still it hit a mark that left its place in the lexicon of movie history.
I also go and say that this probably had the best soundtrack for a soundtrack that never actually appeared in the fucking
film. I was going to say, I mean,
what was the soundtrack?
It was the tape in Josh's car.
It was Lydia Lunch, Public Image Limited, Skinny Puppy, Bauhaus, The Creatures, Laboc, Afghan Wigs, Frontline Assembly,
Typo Negative,
Meet Meat, Manifesto, Tones on Tail, and Tony Cora. I mean, we're talking like, if you want late 90s industrial goth, this is your go-to soundtrack.
Yeah, it's right up there with the Hideaway soundtrack and actually the Blair Witch 2 soundtrack. The Book of Shadows had a pretty decent soundtrack to it as well. But that was much more of a traditional style. It was a bridge.
Right.
Like this, I feel like, was the mainstream marriage to the idea of found footage. And...
Well, nobody had done that before.
Gomez, you mentioned it was sort of the return of found footage. Are there any indie flicks or anything that you're?
There weren't any like 1970s cult found footage. What was it? Not Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, that's
like 1980.
Yes. Cannibal Holocaust comes up first. Then Blair
Witch. Wasn't that a found footage?
It was.
But was it...
Yeah, okay.
Was it found footage in this style where it's like the people...
A professor stumbles across lost film shot by a missing documentary crew.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is basically like, okay, except that instead of the Amazon rainforest, we said, hey, let's go to Maryland.
Oh, this is an interesting article. I got one. 7 found footage horror movies that predate the Blair Witch Project. Cannibal Holocaust, 1980. Manson Family Movies.
See, interesting.
Yeah.
UFO Abduction, 1989.
Wow.
It's going to make me go to a stupid second page. Why?
Did
Ghost
you
watch 1992?
Did you use Bing?
Is that what's man going on? No, he's on crack.
Man Bites Dog, 1992. That is a good movie. America's Deadliest Home Video, 93. Last Broadcast, 98. I don't know some of the other ones, but that's interesting.
But it's even, I mean, even thinking like things that were very much cult, I mean, even more cult than this, like Faces of Death.
I was going to say, like, that's what I was thinking more, like Faces of Death, Traces of Death.
But even so, but, I mean, they were definitely found, they were definitely found footage films that came before Blair Witch Project, was more what I was going with. But this is the movie that really kind of thrust that out there, like you can make a move, you make a mainstream movie in this style and with that framing device.
And I think, I mean, there's something about the meta to the design of the movie that really is what made it work, because I get the feeling, you know, and we mentioned Faces of Death, and it's like the idea that this movie only can exist because the footage was found and because of the way it was shot. You know what I mean? Like, for people that were shooting a documentary, it really became more a thing like, you know, like when one friend, and I was this guy in college, so I know friends definitely said shit like this to me, but like, you know, the guy who buys a video camera and then is just fucking taping everything for the next 3 months because he bought.
Yeah, I was that fucking guy too in high school. Everybody hated me.
And everyone's like, dude, what's with the fucking camera? And you're like, I spent $600 on it that I didn't really.
I'm using it, damn it.
You know what I mean? I'm supposed to make a movie. And that was what made us feel like we could, like the idea was in college, we were going to try to make a movie. And I remember being at a party in the summertime with friends from school, because we all got together and we were talking about, yeah, well, you know, we're going to make a movie this year. We're going to make a better movie than that fucking Blair Witch shit this year, just because we're going to put effort. You know, that it's the thing about Blair Witch. Once it became known that it was a fictional thing, you're like, all right, look, if you guys were doing this fake, like if this was Hollywood at work, we expect better from you. You know what I mean? If this was actually tapes that were found where people disappeared, and it could be, you know, all right, so these guys were just acting like a douchebag with this camera. You know what I mean? Like, because that whole, the worst part of the whole thing is when Josh takes the camera and he's like, oh, I get why you like looking through this, Heather. It's like, that's your motivation. You can't get out of the woods. That's your motivation. You're like, this is fucking stupid. Whoa, even if they did find these tapes, why the fuck are we watching this part? You know what I mean? I just want to see the parts where
you edit this.
Yeah, I just want to see the parts where they're getting attacked by the ghosts or the witches or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah, and no, so there's none of that. There's and none that, of that in there. But you know what? What Clerks did that for me. I was like, this asshole just took him and his buddies' inside jokes and made a whole fucking awesome movie. Oh, we got that. I could do that shit.
Yeah.
And look at how bad it's shot. I could do that. But look, I think the timing of this movie was very important for its success. Early internet. To its credit, similar to what I read about The Exorcist, people are running out of this fucking movie screaming, partly because it was scary, partly because the shaky cam kind of made them vomit.
Yeah.
But to its credit, it caused quite a stir, and you weren't. Absolutely. It was still that time where you could go to a movie and not know anything about it. You could not do that anymore. And it annoys the shit out of me.
Yeah, it's almost like they have to go out of their way to be making two movies at once. The one that they're fake putting out there. I mean, the fact that there is a new Blair Witch film that's just been released.
One
thing that I actually really appreciate about this film is that it's not afraid to leave questions unanswered.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No joke.
That's something that I think gets missed in a lot of movies, where they feel like, okay, I need to explain everything.
Yeah.
And this one was like, you know what? We're okay. Like, what's the witch? Who cares? We're not going to get into that until they made the
I could have used maybe a teeny bit more. That was the problem. I was like, what is scary in this fucking movie?
I'm thinking
in terms of like Cloverfield, which is like the other big found footage film, right? Yeah.
Well, it's
never find out why the monster wakes up, or did it fall from the sky, or
but at least they show you a cool monster or parts of it.
Yeah,
you know, they show you parts of it. You never pull back and see the full thing. Right?
Once you get,
but you get a sense of size and scale. Like, you know, it's this big fucking Godzilla thing that's coming through.
But
this
I
don't know what they were running from or what. But in the same point, that's what made it scary.
But that's also, I mean, isn't it always scarier, like, what your imagination conjures up as opposed to, oh, so that's what they're running from? That's
right.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's my problem with It, the movie version at the end. I was like, he's just a big fucking spider.
I felt the exact same way. Too, yeah, it is in the book, but it's just like Really? I mean,
there are other problems with the book, but
yeah, like the child orgy scene. That's
exactly where I was going.
There you go. That I think they are somewhat translating to the new film adaptation. Really? There will be some at least dealing with
it. But are they going to be able to top Tim Curry as Pennywise?
No.
That TV show scared the crap out of me too. Like,
thank you.
Legitimately awesome scares in that.
Yeah, well, and especially the fact now we've got real creepy clowns running around.
It's a hoax.
I think it's a stunt for the movie.
That's
a
lie.
Movie.
It was to begin with in Wisconsin, people keep calling in hoaxes to police stations about this.
There are no
actual creepy clowns hanging out in the woods.
Really?
Some motherfucker is gonna get shot any day.
There was a kid that got stabbed in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, for wearing a clown costume.
He was wearing a clown mask, and somebody straight up stabbed him.
The guy who stabbed him should walk, because I would fucking do the same thing. You're gonna scare me with a clown? You're gonna get a fucking knife in the chest.
We actually just did a Halloween horror cast about the 2016 creepy clown phenomenon, and we did posit, like, is this just a big publicity stunt for the remake of It? If it is, the movie still hasn't come out till 2017, like later in 2017.
This is actually one of the latest clown hoax. There's been a series of them through the years, starting with like 8 in 82.
Oh wow!
Wow! Holy shit!
This is not the first clown hoax sightings, and sadly, it probably won't be the last.
Well,
you guys know people who are scared by clowns. Like, I kind of love that there are some people who are just fucking terrified by even just like the friendliest clown.
Well, it's an actual.
Okay, when you look at our age range, so you have John Wayne Gacy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pennywise.
Yep. And the fucking
Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
The doll from Poltergeist was like a fucking horrifying.
I hated the fucking doll.
You know,
he grabbed the kid, the tree ate him, and then the clown grabbed him.
And like the face of the clown changed, like it had a scary mouth, and you're like, that's an inanimate fucking object! It's not, its fucking facial expression should be allowed to change! It's when your mind is seeing things that it cannot reconcile. It's like, this doesn't happen, and it's happening, and you're like, oh, thank God to them and not me.
It takes me back to like when I was a kid, I legitimately bought from a back of a comic book a ventriloquist dummy.
To
learn how to be a ventriloquist. But
so you wanted to be a supervillain?
Yeah,
a little bit. I wanted to be, I forgot what his name is. But that fucking guy creeped me out just sitting there.
Yeah.
Because it would make me think of Poltergeist.
Well, there's.
I was like, why did I buy this?
It's something that we wound up mentioning on the Creepy Clown episode, but I think it has to do with the Uncanny Valley and.
The soulless eyes.
Yeah. It's all these things that are like. When something is designed to mimic people that closely, but be off enough that you're like, it's messing up my fucking mind. It's like, I can't.
It's the fixed expression on the face.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has a lot to do with it.
Like my grandma, when she rest in peace, she used to live in Pennsylvania. And when we would go to visit her, the kids' room, the guest room, she had an armoire with a mirror in the middle of it. And all of these porcelain glass-faced dolls that were clowns, all right? Let's put it that way. And they were in, like, you know, she must have bought them off, like, QVC or something. So they all had these, like, stands so that they're standing. And she had, like, 20 of them. So there's 10 on the top and, like, 5 going down the sides. And, like, I would just have to close my eyes and be like, I don't give a shit what you hear. Do not open your eyes, man. Just like, hopefully you'll fall asleep. But there were nights.
Before they kill you.
Yeah. Because if you fall asleep before they kill you, at least you won't be feeling it until it's too late. You know, but like, there was always that moment where you're just like, this is the most horrifying shit ever. And like, there would be nights I'm lying in there in the total dark. The only light would be if anything was coming in through the window because there was moonlight or something. And I'm just going like, this is the scariest moment of my life. Like, this right here is the scariest. And, like, thinking about it, these movies would, like, trigger those memories. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I think the idea, I don't know, the idea that even there probably are people that, you know, like the sequel to Blair Witch kind of played with the idea of this, too, where all these people are going to the woods with their video cameras hoping they're going to see something. And it's kind of, like, playing on the fact that when we... when we first discover a new fear like this as a society, first it like spreads in a wave of popularity where people are like, oh, that's cool. But then slowly it kind of builds and becomes part of the back of your mind and part of this like subconscious fear. And I think that's why we had a nice break between Blair Witch, Blair Witch 2, and then the found footage thing kind of went a little by the wayside. There was a lot in those late 90s. Like, remember there was a show called Freaky Links that was supposed to be like inspired by the Blair Witch Project, well, and it was.
Isn't there also like the, I mean, like the Ghost Hunters and everything else?
That shit is so popular right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it. I mean, I don't feel like any of that would really exist if it wasn't for stuff like the Blair Witch.
Right, but it went straight to a reality TV format. That's became the most palatable until we get to your Paranormal Activity, and then Paranormal Activity really is the Blair Witch. Like in 2006, you know what I mean? There were the same kind of marketing where they're saying, you know, this is the one of the most horrifying films that has ever been created. Like, and they were just showing you that green nighttime
vision that we
basically got used to from the Blair Witch Project. Yep. And you're just seeing the audience watching the movie. And it was the point where it wasn't going to get, I think this was a brilliant piece of marketing. So they even took the marketing from Blair Witch. It wasn't going to get a very wide release. And the promos that I saw were saying, if you want this in your theater near you, go to this website and, you know, tell them. It was the kind of thing that this thing probably had no distribution and probably had very little distribution if it had any. And they were like, here, watch, we'll make people beg for it. You know what I mean?
And now there's like five of them.
Oh my God. I just saw like a seventh one on cable and found out that there was one I didn't watch that comes between that one and the one, the Ghost Dimension is the one that I just saw.
There's that, like that many. I was impressed with the Saw franchise that they were able every year, a fucking October, to crank out one of these. Are you kidding me? That's unbelievable.
And Paranormal Activity was doing the same thing. I would say the first three are actually really good. But again, the same way, like to me, we picked this moment because it's the best moment of the movie. It's the only moment in Blair Witch that really feels like a horror movie. Well, the Paranormal Activity movies to a T follow that because it's not until the last 10 minutes of the movie where shit really starts going berserk. Mm-hmm. And if you took the last 10 minutes of those first three movies and strung them together, maybe you throw in the first 5 minutes of each movie so you get a little bit more of like a intro to all the characters, that's your real movie. That's where the whole story for at least the first three are taking place, in what you learn in the last 10 minutes of each movie. You know, like there's very little that you glean from the middle because it's a lot of the same as Blair Witch. You're sitting around watching people have conversations and you're like,
exposition,
Jesus Christ, this is
nobody
so
cares.
Stupid. These characters suck. They're all insipid. I fucking can't stand them. And
well, how does the new one tie into this, the mythos?
Well, so after the third, even the fourth one still is like a through line straight from the first one. The fifth one is called The Marked Ones, and that's where it completely, like, you're basically following the same family. You find out that in the family that we started out by seeing the older sister in the first movie, and then we kind of backtrack. The second movie actually takes place before the first movie for the most part, and the third movie goes even further back. You find out that her and her sister, when they were little, their grandparents were a coven of witches. Ooh. And they made a pact with a demon that their granddaughters would give birth to a child that basically would be the living host for this demon, and it would, you know, like devil, they would come to the earth and take over. And so what we've been seeing is sort of like the demon in the first movie, the demon's like around and it's like it wants the one sister who didn't have a kid. It's like obsessed with her. And as the movies continue, we start to see it backtrack and we learn more about the grandparents. In the fourth movie, it's a little weird, but it's still the same storyline. The fifth movie is where this thing is kind of legion. At each movie, we find out that there are a lot of people possessed. The fifth movie, it goes into more of like a Latino neighborhood, where so it's people who totally are not related to the family from the first movie.
It gets ethnic, people.
But it's the same. Yeah, it's showing that it has reach. And then I didn't see this one, so I don't know all the details, but what a friend of mine from work told me was that that is the one that opens up the possibility of time travel, and then it starts to go really weird. And then the new one, the Ghost Dimension, the house that the first three movies took place in, there is this like I would call it the thinny, like a spot in the thinny where like the membrane between dimensions is weak. And so that the thinny is from Stephen King,
like between here and the upside down,
basically. Yes, and it even looks kind of like a crack. And so like in the new movie, like they find the camera from the first movies, and when he's like looking through the room, it's normal. And then hey, there's like a really blurry spot right there, and then normal, and there's nothing on the lens. And when he steps into the blurry spot. This was obviously designed to be seen in 3D IMAX because there's all this little shit floating around. It basically is the upside down. Like he steps into a translucent upside down. And I only watched like 2 seconds of it because I was like, when the hell did this other Paranormal Activity movie come out? I haven't even heard about this one. How many have I missed between this one and and I thought I was watching the third one because like they do this trick. Which Cloverfield used a little bit, where when they're watching the tapes in the camera, we're seeing stuff they just shot, and then it goes fuzzy for a second, and then it's like, oh, hey, here's footage from the third movie, because they obviously are the same tapes that they're taping over. You know what I mean? And you're like, oh, shit. And like the end of the third one actually is literally the best ending of them all. You're just like, holy fuck, they just killed that guy. Like, it's actually very, very cool. I really, really highly recommend. You can watch the third one without watching the first two.
Okay.
And
yeah,
it's
I've heard
badass.
We recently had a guy on our show, the Jock and Nerd Podcast, who from Dead X Radio, these guys are, they're ghost hunters. They're paranormal investigators. So I asked him, he was telling us about how the machines he used, EVPs, different, instances. Has he seen something? And they're very serious about this. They're out of Florida. Very interesting stuff. I love it. And it's a growing trend on TV. And then I think what's interesting about the horror genre is, like, you think about the Western, and it kind of went away. Like, horror is always going to be around.
Yeah.
And the movies are pretty much critic-proof. Yeah. It does not matter what the critics think, because everyone needs a horror, a good old-fashioned horror movie.
And the worse things are going in the economy, the better horror movies do.
Yeah.
Ah, that is interesting.
Getting us ready for the blood in the streets.
Oh, so there's going to be a lot of horror movies coming out that's coming
out.
No matter which monster winds up in the White House.
Exactly. Precisely. Well,
we do not support any candidate here.
All monsters.
We are nonpartisan.
Yeah, at least when we're on the air.
Exactly.
But holy shit. Well, I know we went off on so many tangents, but at least it was all within the same realm of found footage that was kicked off by the fact that we watched the Blair Witch, or talking about the Blair Witch. And again, I mean, how much more proof of an iconic moment do you need than the fact that it became aped to the point of super popularity again? Mm-hmm. So there we are. Some iconic moments in movie history, probably far more than you bargained for when you pressed play at the beginning of this episode. But I know it was fun for me, so I hope it was fun for everybody else out there. Imran, what do you want to tell us about Jock and Nerd? What's going on over there? Anything you want to plug? Anything coming up? Anything cool happening?
You know, listen, just visit jockandnerd.com. If you guys watch you know, like The Flash, Arrow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We review these episodes. We do a lot of news of the week. So we're always talking about how shitty Zack Snyder is. And that, the Marvel Netflix shows are great. We will have a full Luke Cage review this month. Very nice. A lot of fun stuff this month. Every week, there's one show, if not more. So we're like a weekly geek digest for your ear holes, jockandnerd.com. That's all you got to know.
Awesome, man. Good friends to have made over here at Halloween.
I'm so glad I met you guys, because I had another blast doing this, just like our last comic book moment show. I love this show. You guys are awesome. And I remember the name of the show now, too.
Awesome. Yeah, sometimes they come together fast and quick like this, and then most of the time we try to give plenty of heads up and stuff, but, you know, I figured, hey, man,
sometimes you don't really need it, man. You're just, you know, we're hanging out, we're having a conversation. Like, that's it. It's great.
And we're kind of like, you know, a little bit of a therapy session for you, trying to relieve some stress from the crazy weeks that we're all having. Gomez, what's going on with you, buddy?
I got nothing at the moment. I'm going to be trying to do NaNoWriMo next month, though. So it's losing my mind.
So on the next series of What Am I Watchings and iconic movie moments, there might be some erratic behavior by Gomez, not Adam.
Just a touch.
But, yeah, all right, man. Well, we'll keep it steady rocking. We still have plenty of films that we're going to be tackling for What Am I Watching. We've kind of gone through back to school time, and I think it's probably time to start carving up some horror films. films over there as well. But I don't know. A lot of people have been talking about wanting us to do Gross Point Blank and some other films that we've been talking about doing. So maybe we'll just, you know, we'll see what happens.
We'll jump around some.
Yeah, but there will be some blood and guts to talk about over there. And of course, if you're in that mood, you want to check out our horror cast as well with our new member of the Hollow Nine, Whitney Benson, kicking ass over there with Liz Joplin and myself for the most part. So much going on, so much as we barrel towards Halloween and then the holidays after. We hope you guys are all doing great out there. Hope you'll visit iTunes and give us some 5-star ratings and reviews. Those are awesome. And hit up the Jock and Nerd too. Give them some 5-star ratings and reviews as well. And all the rest of our friends at Hollow Nine and all of you Hollow Niners out there, thank you. Make sure if you're going to do something, make it iconic. You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow9Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, cast. Email us at Hollow9Podcast@gmail.com. Or find us at our home site, Hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, Fangirlzone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow 9.